guys, welcome back to IPV and Me. Hope you're all well since I last spoke to you a couple of weeks ago. Everything's been pretty great on my end, just been going to work and trying to hang out with friends and have a life and enjoy the weather before it starts to get too crazy humid as it tends to do in this city. I just booked my flights home to Ireland for July because I have a wedding. My sister's going to be home from Australia, so that's going to be pretty fun. I'm only going to go for a week. I wish I could go longer, but I just can't get the time off of work. But I'm still looking forward to it anyway. See the nephews, see everyone. And because it's a wedding too, it's great because like when you come from somewhere like Ireland, you tend to kind of know everybody when you go to weddings, and it's going to be nice to have everyone in the same room, and then there's no pressure to like try and get to see everybody while I'm home and all of that. So that'll be fun. And yeah, I just booked my ticket for Niall Horan. He's going to be playing in the Garden next week, so I'm going to go to that. I tend to always book my concert tickets last minute. You'll never catch me be that person that's in a panic trying to get tickets on the day they go on sale. Like, I always get them after. I never pay extortionate prices. Like, my ticket today was $77 and I have great seats, and yeah, I never stress out about it. Like, I've been known to buy concert tickets the day before I go to a show, and I've never been disappointed. So, I don't know. You'll never catch me stressing. But I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be my friend's birthday too, so going to celebrate her. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Just going to get on with the show today because I don't have a whole lot of time. And I'm really trying to be on point with getting the episodes ready every 2 weeks and not have any more delays like I have done previously. I'm trying my best here. So without further ado, this is going to be part two of the story of Melanie B, aka Scary Spice. Andrea was asleep when the phone rang at 3 a.m. It was Stefan. She couldn't believe the words coming out of his mouth. "You fucking cunt, you fucking bitch, trash, whore." She started shaking. She had never been spoken to like that. He kept going. Torrents and torrents of filth and the most hurtful, evil, wicked words came out of his mouth. He was screaming at the top of his voice. She was in a state of shock. She didn't even understand a lot of what he was saying. She never felt that words could be weapons before. She felt like she was being hit with bullets. He said, "You have been fooled by a 9-year-old child, you fucking bitch." Her head was spinning. It took her a few minutes to realize Mel must have been in the room with him. She could hear him telling her, "So your bitch mother said this, right?" Then she heard Mel say, "Phoenix, go to your bedroom." And she heard Stefan say, "No, she needs to hear this. She needs to hear what fucking lies she's told. And she needs to know what a stupid cunt her grandmother is. And she needs to know she will never see her again. And you need to know, you fucking bitch whore, you will never see your grandchildren again." She heard Phoenix sobbing, which made her completely break down. "Don't let her hear this," she begged. The line went dead. Andrea felt violated and traumatized. Mel's phone was off. Andrea called Martin, who said he would call Stefan right away. He was more stunned than angry. He too couldn't get through. They kept trying both numbers hour after hour. Andrea knew they were about to move house and she didn't know their new address. She emailed her several times asking her to call her and apologizing, even though she hadn't done anything wrong. By the morning, all of the emails had bounced back with a failed delivery message. Mel's email address, which she had had for years, had been erased. Then her phone said the number was no longer in use. Their daughter and granddaughter had been cut out of their lives. Over the years, there were times when she would call her mother's home phone and sob. Her mother would frantically ask where she was and if she was hurt, but all Mel could do was sob. On other calls, she's ashamed to say now, she would be goaded by Stefan to scream abuse at her, fueled by drink and paranoia and the burning pain of what she felt was abandonment by her mother. She felt she had to choose between her family and Stefan. She thought they had betrayed her or were trying to ruin her, that they hated her and had only ever wanted her for her money. And that's just exactly how an abuser can twist your mind, turn your family against you, turn you against your family. It's just a vicious, vicious cycle. An old friend of Phoenix's told Mel years later that one day when she'd been on a playdate at their house, she recounted to her how terrifying Stefan was. This friend had already been pretty scared of him herself, as he was always rude and dismissive of her. Phoenix went on to tell her about his gun and then took her downstairs where the gun's lockbox was on the dining table. It was the last time this friend would ever visit the house. She told her mother that she never wanted to go there again. Mel missed a lot of things that happened to Phoenix, as Stefan kept her busy working all the time. She never saw the cruelty he inflicted on her daughter's sweet and gentle dog, Lordy. He was old and had bad hips. Stefan would beat him in front of Phoenix. He had once even picked up the dog and thrown him in the swimming pool while Phoenix was in it. Stefan had so many rules for her. She needed to ask before opening the fridge to get a drink or a snack. She wasn't allowed to turn the TV on without permission. She had to make her own lunches for school if Mel wasn't there, and sometimes Stefan would even eat the lunch himself afterwards. He decided when and if her friends came over, or whether she was grounded and for how long. None of the kids were allowed outside of the house to play, as he said parks were dangerous. He wanted the house pristine and worried the kids so much that they ate on the floor so as not to damage the expensive dining room table and velvet chairs. They also had to keep their rooms extremely tidy. He would say that food dropped on the floor had germs that would kill them. He said there were boogeymen everywhere. Mel even secretly bought a small fold-up table for them so they could at least sometimes sit at a table to eat. They had to keep it a secret in a storage room in the house. That is so messed up to think that. Like, imagine having so much anxiety as a child that you're too scared to even eat at a table because you know if you make a little bit of a mess that you're going to be screamed at and had all kind of abuse thrown at you. That's so disgusting and disturbing. One time he showed the girls videos of men being beheaded by ISIS with chainsaws as he cooked in the kitchen. They were traumatized. Angel was, however, still his golden goose, and he would praise, cuddle and spoil her while Phoenix was punished. One time she heard them screaming and shouting and heard her mother say, "Stop, get off," followed by little thumps. She peered into the room and saw Stefan with his pants down and her mother pushed over the couch. She froze, but then just went back to her room. This was just her family life. In Phoenix's own words, she says, "The first time I set eyes on Stefan, I didn't like him. My mom had just had a baby and I was with my grandma in our hotel room when this big, loud dude appeared, being super friendly and all over her and Angel. I wasn't that spoiled bratty kid who never wanted to share her mom. I loved Eddie as soon as I met him. And then Stefan was around all the time. He was driving me to school, living in our house, telling me when I could have something to eat and drink, telling me when I saw this giant ring on his finger that him and my mom were getting married. Are you serious? I asked her. You're marrying that guy? By then I was nearly 10 years old and I'd woken up to the fact that life can just suddenly turn into a pile of crap. I'd had it so good for years. I had this amazing, funny, strong mother. I had this great family in Leeds. I had a dad who was my best friend. I had this movie-perfect life in Los Angeles with sunshine, lots of great people in our lives, and my dog, Lordy. When Eddie came along, things got even better. He treated me like one of his kids, and I started doing really well in school. And then it was like someone just switched the channel to this total shitstorm show, the Stefan show. Stefan didn't like me. He beat up my dog and laughed when Lordy got so ill he had to be put down. Now you don't have to walk him. He left shit in my room. He would start screaming about something like me leaving food on my plate and go so ballistic. It was as if I'd committed a crime and had to be seriously punished. I couldn't talk to my mom. Someone else who looked like her was in her body. I completely understand what she is saying by this. Like, I know that afterwards, you know, all of my friends told me that I looked completely different. I even look at myself, like, recently enough, actually, I saw a picture of myself from back when I was still with my abuser. And I was honestly, like, shocked when I saw myself. My face was so sunken. Like, I was always skinny, but I just looked, like, deathly skinny. Like, my cheeks were sunken, not in a good way, like, in a really ill-looking way. My hair looked limp. I looked so pale. I was like a shell of myself. And I totally understand what Phoenix means here when she's looking at her mom. And like, to think of like being a 10-year-old child and looking at your mom as being that person is seriously traumatizing. My mother believed every word he said. She loved him, I could tell. This might be the way it was when your mom got married. Maybe I had to suck it up. I didn't want to ruin it for her. I remember finding Stefan's gun. I was on my own in the house. He was always talking about his gun. I was snooping around in their bedroom. I found it in a box, which opened as soon as I pressed on it. I took it out and looked at it. I saw the bullets in the barrel. I pointed it at my head and said, bang. Then I put it back. I'd held a gun. It was sort of cool and sort of scary. I thought if I told my grandma how mean he was to me, she'd be able to do something. I always felt like I was in trouble. He told me I was retarded and ugly. He cursed at me and shouted so close to my face I get spit all over me. I was being grounded for nothing. I told grandma about the gun, and I put a bullet through my whole world and my mom's. I think that broke my family, and it was my fault. Stefan seemed to hate my dad. It used to make me cry and make me confused. Every time I saw my dad, there was drama. It felt so I didn't even want to go. And then I did something so bad, it still breaks my heart today. I was maybe 10. I was in a mood when I got to my dad's, and I started yelling so much he locked me in the bedroom to calm me down. I called my mom and said that he'd locked me in a room. Stefan shouted, "Call the police," and I did. They busted into the house and arrested my dad in front of me. It was horrific. He was crying, I was crying. I never really got to see my dad again for what seemed like forever. It was the second time he'd been arrested in front of my face. It had happened before at school. They both turned up to pick me up and Stefan was screaming at me to get in his car. I did because I was pretty petrified. My dad went wild and Stefan called the police who took my dad away. I don't think Stefan really got to me because I taught myself to shut him out. I made myself stop crying, stop acting scared, stop shaking. I didn't care what he said to me. I did care when he'd scream at my mom, talking to her like she was an idiot. I'd listen at their door and hear her crying. My mom is this crazily tough woman, but I knew she was scared of him. She was a mess. I think my mom started drinking a couple of years after they got married. They both drank, a lot. I hated it when I got dragged into their rows. I'd get so angry and tell him to stop giving her drink. I'd scream at him, "Why do you let this happen to her? Do something. Send her to rehab. Stop videoing her." He was the one who used to buy it. He was the one who used to say, "Let's go out. Come on, babe, have a drink." And he was the one pouring her drinks and then going batshit crazy when she got off her face. That's so much to put on a child, like making them think that it's all their fault, like with the situation with her dad getting arrested. And then her even having to deal with seeing her mom in that state and like knowing that it's Stefan that's doing it. He's prying her with alcohol just so he can then berate her later and say that she's a drunk and a mess, and then also making her look bad in front of her family, her friends, whoever. Phoenix continues, "I tried to do my own thing. Then he'd get into my friends. None of them understood my life. I don't think I was ever in danger, but I know my grandma was scared for me. I knew things were getting worse and worse with them. My mom kept telling me she was going to leave him. I think we actually did leave a couple of times, but she always went back. I kept Angel and Maddie away for most of it. I'd take them away back to their bedrooms. I've seen a lot of arguments. One time in the Mount Olympics house, the police came. On lots of occasions, my mom would sleep in my room. I didn't ever know what to do. Maybe I could have done something more. I would get texts from her at times saying I can't do this. I would be out at friends or at home and I wouldn't know what to say. I'd hear her crying in her bathroom or her bedroom. She'd say she would divorce him, but nothing ever happened until we finally all left in March 2017. I couldn't speak to my grandma because I didn't have her number and because I would probably cause another world of trouble. I couldn't speak to my dad because there was nothing he could do. If I asked my mom what was wrong, she would say, life is hard." Stefan would tell Mel that it wasn't him who upset Phoenix, it was her, because she hated being around her mother. He would say that she had told him that herself. He would say she was an embarrassment to Phoenix. Mel acknowledges that she did bad things as a mother. She drank in front of her kids, she passed out in front of them. Phoenix was regularly brought in to witness her incapacitated and to watch as Stefan would make her sign, "I will not drink again" documents. Research done in Australia showed that emotionally manipulative people will tell their partner she's a bad mother so many times she becomes less confident in her ability to parent, which therefore causes a rift between her and the child and rocks the relationship, therefore empowering the position of the other parent. Threats like, I can get your children taken away from you, are often thrown around. Anyone who has ever been in an abusive relationship will tell you that friends will start to drift away. Initially, this makes things easier as you have less people to hide the abuse from. The entire circle of people Mel trusted and relied on most was decimated within a year and a half. Chris later told her he had never witnessed a man speak to a woman the way Stefan spoke to her. Ugly, slut, fat, stupid, bitch, worthless, drunk, pathetic, monkey, derelict. They had become to her just words that were said so many times she absorbed them like a sponge. His behaviour toward her affected everyone. In front of Chris, he would say those words with a smile on his face, acting exasperated or making a joke about how useless she was. Chris wasn't fooled, though. No one was. He had asked her one day why she let him speak to her like that. She was embarrassed, he had asked her. No one had before. She didn't answer. He didn't ask again. Sometimes she would argue back in front of other people and try to laugh it off. She'd say he comes from New Jersey, when her friends would look horrified by his language and the aggression in his voice. She'd bring forth her Scary Spice character and make crude comments like, he's great in bed, and that would shut everyone up. She didn't want to give what she felt was the real answer, that he hated her because she was nothing. There were people who tried to intervene. Kim, Mel's neighbour, saw Stefan whizzing around the neighbourhood on a skateboard with baby Angel in his arms. She tried to speak to Mel when she was told Phoenix couldn't play with her son at her house because she was grounded for 3 months. She asked her what Phoenix had done to deserve that, but Mel just shrugged her off. Kim could see how Phoenix was a changed child. She had gone into her shell. She walked hunched up. She tried to talk to Mel, but was also aware she could be making things worse for her. She told her how sad and closed off she looked at the time. She was so worried about her. 3 months after her wedding, her assistant and good friend Janet quit. She couldn't take the fact that Stefan was now calling all the shots and Mel felt stuck in the middle of the two of them. They were constantly berating each other. Janet told Mel things like he was going into her bag for her credit cards and going shopping, leaving porn magazines in Phoenix's bathroom and going through Mel's phone. On one of their first holidays together, Stefan said he was going to spend time bonding with Phoenix, but Janet witnessed him take Phoenix into the middle of a load of rocks which were crawling with crabs, knowing how Phoenix had a phobia of them, and leave her there while she screamed until Janet went to get her. She also couldn't bear how he treated the dog. When Phoenix was 9, Andrea and Martin contacted her father Jimmy to try to help him get custody. Child services were called in and Mel had to watch as her kids were stripped and checked over. She couldn't understand why her mother hadn't simply talked to her. Because she doesn't care. Because she hates you. Because she prefers your low-life ex-husband to you, is what Stefan would say. The reality was that Stefan had turned them against her. With her email addresses constantly changing, them moving house every year, all her old employees and friends no longer in touch with her, Mel had become just as much as a monster as Stefan had to them. Stefan hired the most well-known and respected family therapist in LA, a man whose celebrity client list included Michael Jackson and Paris Hilton. He thought Dr. Sophie was going to be his guy. Dr. Sophie recalls something feeling off right away. Stefan was screaming at the dog for barking. He also had pointed at the roof and said he had been putting a green up there to shoot golf balls. He immediately felt he was trying to overpower him. Then he walked in and saw Mel, and she was very quiet and gave nothing away, but he could see in her face and body language that there was damage there. Stefan didn't stop talking over everyone, and it was disorienting. He felt that Mel seemed powerless. Meanwhile, all Mel saw was a man brought in by her husband who would sit in front of them while Stefan either laughed at her, slagged her off, or said how much he loved her and how much she needed to change and do exactly what she said, what he said. She didn't like talking about her problems, especially to who she felt was one of Stefan's people. Stefan was telling Dr. Sophie she was a mess as a mother, that she needed to listen to him because he was smarter, he was her husband, that she sits and drinks all the time, doesn't talk and looks like a weirdo. Then she noticed how Dr. Sophie was looking at him and realised he wasn't buying it. But she still wasn't 100% sure he was still Stefan's guy. In October 2010, in the beautiful and sophisticated Mayfair Hotel in London, Mel and Stefan were having a drink at the bar. A group of guys walked past and looked at her. As a Spice Girl, she knew she should smile because it makes people happy. They usually feel acknowledged and move on. But these guys carried on looking and laughing, and she couldn't do her usual smile and nod because she knew it would cause a problem with Stefan. She was sweating as she heard his breath get faster next to her. She tried to think of something to do, but nothing came to her. And then he was up, screaming and shouting, and then he's on the floor, brawling with the two men. He gets one man on the floor and punches him again and again. Blood was pouring from the man's head, and the two other men were trying to pull Stefan off of him. His shirt was ripped off, and he paced angrily around the bar as the staff asked them to leave. The man was taken to hospital. Photos were taken of the incident, and Mel released a statement saying Stefan had been defending her honour. In 2014, Melanie was in London to be a judge in The X Factor. After years of pretending everything was okay, being in her home country made her see how messed up her life had become. This was like a huge thing for me too. Like the very first trip that I made home to Ireland after I moved to New York with my abuser. I was by myself. I stayed there for 2 weeks, and it was the first time, like, I'd already at that point kind of come to realize this was never going to get better. But being around like my old life, normal people, people who cared about me, you know, doing fun things, not having the stress and the worry of coming home to like abuse, was so freeing and like clarified so many things in my mind for me about the situation. So I completely understand what Mel is talking about here. They were staying in an apartment in London. Part of her also wanted her family to see her on the show and realize she was the same old Melanie, that her kids were gorgeous and happy. She was so low that 2 weeks into filming, she had started using cocaine to get her through the run of the show. She had a routine. She would wake up and snort two lines, then pray to God that she was sorry, but she needed to get through the day. Cocaine numbed her pain and lifted her up enough to be ready to forget everything but the show. Once she was at work, she didn't need to take anything, but as soon as she would leave the building, everything would turn to shit again and the black emotions would crash down on top of her. The cocaine only served to make the depression worse, and she was always anxious and on edge. Women in abusive relationships are 15 times more likely to abuse alcohol and 9 times more likely to abuse drugs than women in stable relationships. But once she was at work, she felt safe. Stefan couldn't touch her and she could ignore his calls. She could start to feel good about herself again. Stefan loved proof. He'd pull out his phone and video her while asking her questions. Melanie, have you taken cocaine? Look at you, you're off your head. He'd wait until she was at her worst. In their house, Stefan preferred to have the curtains tightly closed at all times to keep them from prying eyes. They were living in permanent darkness with no natural daylight. Mel loved and needed a lot of light and air. She began to fear the outside world. She had paranoia that everyone around her was selling stories on her. She was suspicious of everyone she met. Party invitations would go unanswered, as apart from going to work, she felt she shouldn't leave the apartment without Stefan's permission. She still thought his approval was for her own good. Stefan would refuse to watch any of the recorded X Factor shows on TV and would talk loudly when the girls and her were trying to watch, saying it was so boring, and turn up his rap music. When she was at the show, he would call her 50 times in a 2-hour period, asking where she was, what she was doing, telling her she had to be back, accusing her of sleeping with Simon Cowell, and accusing her security guy Chris of covering up the affair. She remembers one day sitting in the apartment looking at a cheese sandwich and wondering if it was poisoned. Was she going mad? During this time in The X Factor, her sister Danielle called the show to give a message to Melanie that their father was dying. She was in denial about it. She knew he was a strong guy and cancer wouldn't get him. She would call his doctors every now and again and they would just say he was coping well. But one night she realised she needed to fix things before it was too late. She drove the 4 hours to Leeds to his house. The atmosphere without years of communication was tense. He had not forgiven her for making a documentary a few years before in Leeds and not coming to see him. He wanted to know why, but she didn't know what to say. He started shouting at her to mind her own business and go home, that he didn't want her there. He said she had forgotten who she was. He pushed her out of the house. She cried all the way back to London. She didn't know how to make it better. She had an interview with Grazia magazine, and while the writer Joe Stone was telling her how perfect her life seemed, she was nodding and thinking, "I'm in hell." Just before that, she had been in the makeup chair hysterical, unable to breathe as sobs racked her body. One day when she was with her PR, Simon Jones, she burst into tears and said he had to help her, that she was desperate. She said she had to get away from Stefan. She wanted a divorce, but he had all of these videos of her that could ruin her. Simon was the first person she had ever said any of this to. He was calm and kind, but she couldn't believe she had said anything and knew she had to stop falling apart and put everything right again. I remember this feeling too of like, you get to a point where, you know, you're so full up of trying to keep everything in and you've not let anything out because you're so busy trying to like cover up everything. But it gets to a point where, you know, you can only pour so much water into a glass without it overflowing. And that's just what happens. It's like you cannot keep it inside of you any longer. It's just without even being able to control it, it just starts pouring out of you and you'll like drop little things like this, like crying hysterically, you know, saying things to random people that you know, and then kind of regretting it after when you feel a little better because, you know, you've left a little bit of it out now. So now you feel a little bit better and you could take on a little bit more. And then you realize, oh, shit, like, I should not have said that. And now people are going to be asking questions and I don't want to deal with this just yet. She couldn't pretend anymore. She had to get out of this hell she was in. So she took the pills. Then she felt like she was being shocked out of a trance. She felt weirdly calm, as if she'd finally taken control and was going to be all right. She did not want to die. She calmly told Stefan she had done something stupid and she needed him to help her, that she had taken a massive overdose of pills. For some reason, the door was jammed. She felt like a trapped animal. Why couldn't she get out? She needed to get her stomach pumped. Her mind wasn't working right and she couldn't tell if words were coming out of her mouth or if she was hearing them in her head. Maybe this was it. Everything started to go black. She could feel the life draining away from her body. She remembers grabbing for her phone and talking to people, but can't remember who. Then she heard another voice she found out later was her security man, Chris. Then nothing. She lay semi-conscious on the bathroom floor and drifted in and out of consciousness. It would be 3 years until she found out the full story from her hairdresser, Randy. When Randy received the call from Mel, she sounded very blurry. She said she needed it to stop. He knew she was talking about Stefan, even though she had never spoken to him about how bad it was with him. She told him she was going to lie down with her kids until she died. He ran to her place where Stefan answered the door. He was smiling and acting like there couldn't be any reason why Randy would be at their door in the middle of the night. He knew something was wrong, but was aware that at least Chris was there and would look out for her, so he went home, as he knew Stefan, who appeared very calm, wouldn't let him pass the door. He went back in the morning and Mel herself buzzed him in. He was shocked at her appearance. She was slumped like a broken doll in a pile of clothes in the middle of the hall. The kids and Nanny had left for school and Stefan was in the bedroom. He dragged her into Phoenix's room. She was groaning and telling him she'd taken an overdose and all the pills were still inside her. He had to get her out of there without alerting Stefan. He pushed her into the shower where she keeled over. He wrapped her in a towel and lay her on the bed when Stefan walked in and looked at her. Then he did the most bizarre thing by putting on a baby voice and saying, "Cuddle me, babe." He then got into the bed and started spooning her as if everything was normal. Randy went cold as Stefan kissed the back of her head. He eventually managed to get her to a hospital. When she told the doctor she had taken 200 pills, he looked stunned. She started making calls to Simon Cowell, in between having tubes stuck down her throat and vomiting. She was telling him she was sorry, but she wouldn't be able to make it to work while the nurses got ready to do a total blood transfusion because the damage caused by her having the pills inside her for so long was so bad. One of the memories that haunts Mel most about this time was Phoenix by her bed, full of rage, asking why she would want to leave her and her sisters. It was the saddest moment of Mel's life. The mask had come off. It was then she knew she had to fight back. She wishes she could say that suddenly she was completely transformed and filled with strength and power. She wasn't. She realised just because a huge dramatic thing had happened in her life didn't mean the world stopped. She had her kids to deal with, calls coming from the other Spice Girls to check in on her, her mother trying to track her down. Stefan had called her in a panic. It was the first time in years he hadn't called to scream abuse at her, and this panicked her even more as she knew it would be a bad situation. He said he would agree to let her see Mel. She was more terrified than usual that he would allow that. Stefan would call her PR Simon and scream abuse at him, saying he was blaming him for what happened. Simon Cowell was sending people every day to check on her and make sure she was okay. In the end, Mel's absence from the X Factor was blamed on a stomach ulcer. She knew it wasn't honest, but she wanted to protect herself, the show and the final acts. She also felt a little relief that at least some people in her life knew what was really going on. Stefan had been calling her constantly, but she blocked him. Chris and Simon refused to tell him where she was. His threats grew increasingly aggressive. It was incredible to know he couldn't get near her. She sent Chris to get her girls, but when he went to her apartment, they weren't there. She eventually found out they had gone to Germany to stay with family friends. She was distraught and insisted they return to the UK. Eventually, she got a text to confirm they were on the way back. Due to the years of isolation, she only had her security, her hairdresser, and Simon, her publicist. She wasn't ready to speak to the other Spice Girls as she was too ashamed. Only a week earlier, she'd made a huge fuss to them about a diamond wedding ring he had got her in New York. It had cost £20,000. She boasted to her fellow judge, Cheryl, that he upgraded her wedding ring every year and wasn't he the best. She felt pathetic. It was her who had paid for the ring, and it was a sign of her own misery. Her family had also tracked her down, but they were the last people she wanted to see. She didn't want to hear the I told you so's. She felt trapped behind a wall of guilt, shame, and worthlessness. Bruises faded, but the scars from the emotional damage went way deeper. She still blamed herself and figured there must be something wrong with her, that these men never really seemed to love her. Chris told her in the hospital that she had to leave him. The producers on the show and Simon Cowell said the same. She agreed. Simon Jones told her he was ready to help her through a divorce. She knew she had to leave him and she had to make him know she was serious. She decided to use the biggest stage in Britain to let him know. The X Factor stage. Her doctor looked at her as though she were mad when she said on Sunday morning that she would be on that night's show. He said she didn't realise how serious her condition was. She was in intensive care and had, amongst other things, serious damage to her liver and kidneys. She texted her stylist to send her pictures of dresses. She was going. The makeup artist applied layer after layer to her face and body to cover the bruises. She felt more and more anger. She held onto it as it was giving her strength. She picked a dress with no sleeves and it was white. Without directly saying it, she wanted to confirm to the British media that the rumours over the years were true. She would stand proud with the marks of agony all over her body. She even asked for her hair to be pulled back. She needed to be seen. She needed the bruises to be seen. She took off her wedding ring. As she walked onto the stage and opened her hands in front of her face, directly in the camera's focus, knowing the press, the audience, and most importantly, Stefan, would see her ringless finger. Fuck you big time, she thought. She was happy she had done it. She was going to leave him, get a divorce, and finally be free. But then she heard something that changed everything. Her daughter Madison was on a plane to LA with Stefan. Phoenix later told her that they'd all been at the apartment in London where he had started packing his and Madison's bags to go back to America. She was shaking as he raged around the place. She couldn't do anything to stop him taking Madison to the airport. He said, "She's my kid, she's coming with me." Social media was alive with speculation about her X Factor appearance. She stayed silent, but then Stefan tweeted, "I don't usually respond to Twitter messages, but I will respond to comments of hitting my wife, which I think are quite disgusting, untrue. Mel was very ill. A bunch of doctors helped her get better. If fans can't just relax before being negative, they are not real fans of Mel B." But she had no time to pay attention. Her youngest daughter was missing. Chris finally called the police, but it turned out Stefan wasn't actually breaking the law by taking her out of the country without her mother's consent. It is not considered abduction, but rather a domestic dispute. She explained everything to the officer. They talked about bringing together different agencies involved in domestic violence. She knew she couldn't handle anything like that. She just needed Madison. Then she panicked that she'd made a mistake by talking to them, so she said she now just wanted to report it as a missing child and let the divorce lawyers deal with Stefan. Simon Cowell sent various people to help her, and Simon Jones began speaking to lawyers. She made plans for security to be with her while she went through her separation, as she knew she would need protection. The newspapers were pulling up stories about Stefan's past. Ben Todd, who was president of Psycho Records and TV, tried to help her sort out her finances. She didn't even know her bank codes or accounts. He told her X Factor fee would be going into her bank, so she had to track those down. When they did, however, they realised the money had already, one day before, gone through and Stefan had taken it out. She had no way of finding out where it was. She felt confident she would get Madison back. She felt safe. She started picturing her new life and making peace with her family. But on December 22nd, she made an announcement. She was going to drop all charges and go back to Stefan. She was doing it for a lot of reasons, which she would later explain, and then she was going to come up with a plan to finally leave him. But she had no plan. She felt like a traitor to all the people who had been helping her. She felt like a traitor to herself and to other women, but she had no choice. She got on a flight home. She felt outsmarted, mortified, and foolish. The whole dramatic episode had crumbled to nothing. But she didn't go home to their house. She checked into a hotel with Phoenix and Angel. She felt so low. When she drove to meet him the next day, Stefan's words of greeting were, "You fool." Journalists wrote that they despaired of her. They speculated about why she had returned to him. The real reason Mel went back was that Dr. Sophie had flown to London to see her and assured her Maddie was fine and that he had made a deal with him that she could speak to her on FaceTime every day. Stefan had given his version of events to him. He told her she had to go back to Stefan, that it wasn't the right time and was the worst thing she could do. She was stunned. She screamed at him that Stefan must have gotten to him. She had previously overheard Stefan in his private sessions screaming at him and saying he was useless and he would get him struck off, that he only cared about being a celebrity himself. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Sophie told her that if she left him now, she would risk losing Madison and possibly lose full custody of all three of the children. Stefan could then say that she was not mentally stable enough after the overdose to care for her children and that he took Madison home as he didn't trust her around her. He spoke to her for hours as she sat in disbelief. He said he would support her through it, but that it would take time. Like, I understand where this guy, Dr. Sophie, is coming from, but having her go back to that situation is so dangerous. Like, he's a family therapist, psychologist, whatever, but he's not an expert on domestic abuse, clearly, because then he would know how going back would be so risky. And yes, like, she wants her daughter back, but I don't know. I don't know that I 100% agree with the advice that he gave her. But I kind of understand where he's coming from and what he's saying. I just kind of wish that more people had been consulted, because it could have been, there could have been a different way of doing things, you know. Mel could see eventually that what he was saying made sense. He was medical director for the County of Los Angeles Department of Children and Family Services. He knew what he was talking about. He had seen her over Skype sessions with the couple from London with her hair all over the place and her words slurring. He had been so horrified he had even tried to call 999 from the US because he was so concerned for her. She looked like she had lost herself. As she listened to him explain the consequences she could face, she knew she had to go back so as not to risk losing her girls. She left London without saying a word to anyone. At Christmas days later, Mel was pushing turkey around her plate as Stefan took pictures of his happy family reunited once again. He had hired a house in Malibu for the day. He had bought boxes and boxes of gifts for the kids, which he knew she hated as she didn't want them to be spoiled. She doesn't remember talking much, but he was on a high. She could sense he was nervous, but he was also savouring the moment. She'd been made to look a fool by going back to him. She couldn't even speak to anyone as she had been given a phone with a new number. She and Stefan avoided each other for much of the day, with the occasional insult passing between them. He had won, but he also knew not to push her too far. At one point, he picked up Phoenix's phone and took a picture of them all, which he posted to her Instagram with the caption, "Can everyone just chill? He didn't hit my mom. Don't know how that stupid rumor came up." He took Mel's phone and posted, "Have a Merry Christmas, # family time, # fun day." Like, so gross. And just goes to show, do not believe what you see, read, hear on social media. Mel continued to drink too much and use cocaine on and off. She continued to have threesomes. She continued to work. She was dead inside. It would take 3 more years before she finally left for good. In 2016, she bought Stefan a restaurant. He was a great cook and it had been a dream of his to own one, but her main reason for the purchase was knowing it would be a full-time job and he wouldn't have time to check on her every move. Smart. She was paying for weeks of freedom. She was shooting in Australia, followed by a stint in the UK. As she was always paranoid about her phone being monitored, she had Phoenix, who was in LA, call her mother to come and meet her where she was filming a show near Wales. Despite having not seen each other for 8 years, neither of them said much when they finally met. Andrea cried as Mel kept repeating that she was okay and the girls were okay. None of them mentioned Stefan. They didn't really know how to be with each other, but they said they loved each other. At the end of the year, she told Stefan that after her father died, she would leave him. He laughed, but she felt he was nervous. She had stopped answering all of his calls. He could sense she didn't care. She was losing the fear and slowly starting to take back control. She was making decisions for herself and her daughters. And again, like, this is one of those things where, like, I remember with my situation when I had started to be like that too, and was taking little by little taking control back and not really, you know, listening to his demands. And I could see him spiraling because he knew he didn't have that full control over me anymore. And that's what she's talking about here also. But also, this is, it's such a dangerous, scary time to be in, because you might be feeling a little bit powerful, but when they're feeling like they're losing control of you, that's when they're going to start doing the really dangerous thing, because at that point they're scared that they're losing you and they need to get that power back, and they'll do it however they can. Mel's sister Danielle kept telling her every night how sick her father was, but she had to wait until her run on Broadway for Roxy Hart in Chicago was done. While she was away, Stefan had called Andrea and screamed and ranted down the phone to her. When she was finally ready to leave for England, her passport was missing. She arranged for an emergency one and drove with the Angels to the British Embassy. When she finally got to her father's deathbed, she spoke to him, telling him they were ready and he was ready, but she couldn't start a divorce until he died. And he opened his eyes for a second and looked at her, and there was a moment where she felt every ounce of pain that had ever passed between them disappear. Then he took his very last breath. Her father was out of pain and finally free. She had made him a promise, and now she needed to go and do what he had wanted her to do, get Stefan out of their lives. She said goodbye to her family and left for LA. When she arrived home, she got to her bedroom and started to pack. She texted Dr. Sophie, who she had arranged with to come and talk to the kids with Stefan about the divorce. He couldn't believe it was finally happening. She could feel the tension rising with Stefan when he began insisting on them making a podcast together about their divorce. She finally had a different perspective on her situation while he was still the same old Stefan. She found a house and a divorce lawyer and moved herself and the kids out and got a restraining order on him. So in the restraining order, Mel stated she was in fear for her life, that his abuse ramped up whenever he saw her gain success. When something good would happen to her, he would beat her down to let her know he was in charge. She alleged that he impregnated their nanny, a German exchange student, in 2010, and quickly began to pit the two women against each other, that he would degrade Mel in front of her and compare their looks. He began paying the nanny inordinate amounts of money, in excess of $300,000, and they announced the pregnancy in 2014, stating they wanted all three of them to live together. But Stefan later demanded an abortion and used Mel's money to pay for it. He would force her into threesomes with random women in hotel rooms and threatened to release compromising videos of her if she didn't. In July 2012, she was in New York to tape a segment with the singer Usher. Stefan flew into a rage and accused her of flirting with him all day. He then punched her in the face, saying it was a repercussion for wanting to flirt with and fuck Usher. Her lip and lower portion of her face were swollen to the point where she had to be filmed from a different angle. She told people she had had a reaction to some shellfish she had eaten. In 2012, Stefan punched and pushed her down after she performed at the Olympics with the Spice Girls. She said her skin was scabbed over with rug burns, and he forced her to tweet that she had hurt herself by running in heels. He refused to help her when she had taken an overdose of pills. He insisted instead of locking her in the bedroom and yelling at her to die, bitch. When she told Stefan her father was dying, but she had to stay home for contractual obligations, he told her to suck it up, that if he's going to die, he's going to die. He hid her passport to delay her trip there until after he had passed. On the day before her father's funeral, she missed the flight from LA. She had already been uneasy because she didn't have official permission from Stefan to take Madison out of the country, so missing the flight seemed like a sign. She called her mother to let her know, and she told her she had already said goodbye to take the girls home and have a peaceful day remembering her dad. So she spent the rest of the day in her new house, lighting candles for her dad, saying prayers and thinking of the man whose death had given her a new life. Mel had left Stefan with nothing but $936 in her bank account, the only one she had access to, suitcases of clothes, books and toys. She didn't care. She was happy. Her kids were happy. She was finally free after 10 years. But apart from Dr. Sophie, she had no friends. She wanted to open some champagne and celebrate, but the realization of who and what she had lost hit her hard. So she set about tracking down old friends. She had no idea whether they would still care or not, but the typical response she got was, "Melanie, you're back." The kids were beside themselves with excitement the first time they all sat around the kitchen table to eat. Maddie said, "It's so great to eat at a table, Mummy." They loved their new lives. They even got some new pets. She signed the girls up for dance and gymnastics, invited their friends to the house, barbecued and jumped in the pool, all while howling with laughter. She bought crystals and made a shrine with her Spice Girls outfits. But she couldn't keep reality away from her new world. The story was in the press and she refused thousands of pounds to do tell-all interviews. It just wasn't her style. It was time to hunker down with her family and heal. She didn't understand about PTSD and how the aftershocks of what she had been through would come in waves when she least expected them. She didn't realise how many times she would fall and have to pick herself up again, how she would still make mistakes and need her family's support. She decided to have Stefan's name cut from the tattoo she had on her ribcage. She got the piece of skin cut out by a surgeon. I didn't even know that this was something you could do. It's so strange. But I get why she does it. She couldn't sleep without an armed man downstairs guarding the house. She couldn't go out without worrying that the man on his own or by the bar had been sent to spy on her and listen to her conversations. The landline in her house would ring at least twice a day, and when she answered, she would hear nothing but someone breathing. Was it Stefan? In the middle of this, she was also finding a messy court case. She had to find proof of things it was impossible to prove, recall times and places she had blocked from her mind. I had to do this too, and this is why I'll always say, always have your proof, write things down somewhere if you can, pieces of paper, like screenshots of messages if you can, send them to a friend or someone you trust to keep them and delete them from your phone. Like, it's so important to have proof of these things, because it is very likely you will need it later. But by November that year, as part of a mediation settlement, she agreed to drop the domestic violence charges in order for all 64 sex tapes he had of her not to be shown in open court. She couldn't deal with him anymore. If they had been shown, they would then be in the public domain. Looking back now, it is a deal she regrets, but at the time it was extremely difficult for her. She had to sit down and watch the tapes as a legal requirement. She had no memory of many of the situations she had been in the videos. They frightened her. She watched herself being used sexually in a way she did not enjoy nor want. She went to a hotel with her friend Gary to watch them and was traumatized. There was hours of footage. There were also tapes of her visibly out of it, with Stefan shouting, "Get up, Melanie," again and again, as she struggled to stand or even comprehend what he was saying. Phoenix was also in a few of them. He had dragged her in to see her mother in a state. She didn't even recognize her own face. "Gary, that's not me," she said, pointing at herself in the screen. He told her not to watch it. He couldn't bear to look himself. She was transfixed. Who was this woman with her face and her body? The tapes were dark and out of control. She started to shake, but she needed to watch everything to see what had happened to her. As she lay on the bed, she began to see flashes of herself. Waking up in pools of urine, vomit, feces and blood, being mortified, dragging herself up and rolling up her white bedsheets, stuffing them into bin bags, showering over and over again. She started making strange, uncontrollable whimpers. She lay there for hours until eventually she was silent. Gary never left her side. She'd been doing so well, but now she had gone from a place of hope and happiness to one of grief and shame. She didn't understand then about PTSD. She had good days, great days even, but her bad days were bad. She drank too much, slept too little, and the trauma inside her became a wrecking ball of fear, confusion, and an anger she would never be able to articulate. She fought with people she loved. The anger gave her power. She'd scream that they didn't understand. She would be furious when they would speak back to her in a gentle way. What she really wanted was a fight. She developed tics, which made her feel even more out of control. Days would go by and she would slowly start to come out of it. She described it to her friend as like being in a house where a baby is crying all the time but you can't find where it is. Sometimes the cries are faint and sometimes they are so loud you can't think. She was terrified that her loved ones would not be able to deal with her anymore and abandon her. She would scream at her mother, "Why didn't you ever come and get me?" She was still feeling trapped by her abuser. The cycle would continue for 5 more years. On top of that, she was still dealing with Stefan legally, with accusations, financial demands, depositions, court hearings, etc. Mel was moving the family to Leeds into her mother's house as she was broke, but because Madison was an American citizen, she remained under the jurisdiction of the US courts. As she had dropped the domestic violence charges, in the eyes of the law, Stefan was viewed as a regular father in the family court. Stefan won the court case and Maddie had to live with him. She continues to see her on school holidays but will not stop fighting to get her back. Since walking away from her marriage, Melanie's life has changed beyond measure. She became the patron of Women's Aid, has spoken in Westminster and at party conferences. In 2019, she reunited with the Spice Girls once again for a reunion tour. I was there. She was invited to 10 Downing Street and in 2023 was given an MBE by Prince William for the work she has done to raise awareness of domestic abuse. What moves her most are the letters, emails and messages she receives from thousands of men and women who have experienced abuse. The shameful silence is breaking. She has family and true friends around her and is engaged to a good and kind man who loves her. She is a judge on The Masked Singer and America's Got Talent and works with brilliant teams of people. The Spice Girls are back together and planning more exciting projects. She knows now she is truly fortunate. So that concludes part two of the story of Mel B. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I really, really think it's so brave when women like Mel, like celebrities, like women in power speak out, because when you see that it can happen to someone like that, who is wealthy and privileged, you really start to believe if it can happen to her, it can happen to anyone. And I think it's so important for people like that to speak out. And like I said, she continues her work with Women's Aid. She's done some fantastic things with them. I'm always sharing her posts on social media, so if you follow me, you'll catch some of those there. I think she's worth a follow. Like, majority of her page now is dedicated to awareness of domestic abuse, so it's a really great page to follow. And she's just awesome. And I mean, we're besties now, as I told y'all last week. You know, we had a great conversation. So yeah, I'll never get over the fact that I have met her. Oh my goodness. So yeah, so thanks so much for listening again. I've been seeing, since I came back to the podcast a few weeks ago, I've got, what, 3 episodes up now, and, like, I thought my listenership would be way down, considering I had been away for, like, almost 6 months from the podcast, and, like, guys, I have more listeners now than I did back then, which really, really surprises me. So thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate it so much. Like, you have no idea how much it blows my mind that people actually listen to me talking on here. And I try not to think about it too hard, because I start getting all cringy and shy, and I don't want to hear my voice. I don't want people thinking that people are hearing my voice. But anyways, thank you so much. And again, like, please give me a rating, please. It helps so much. And follow me on social media at Mandgogs. Links and all that are in the bio. Email address, ipvmepodcast@gmail.com. Email me with anything. If you have ideas for the show, stories you think I should cover, questions you have, if you want help and need a little bit more advice, if you want to be a guest on the show, I would love that. If you want your story told anonymously, that can also be done. I would love that. I love hearing from you guys and appreciate every message. And also, apologies about the sound. I think the sound was a little off last week. I'm hoping this week it will be a little better. I did kind of do things a little differently last week, and I think I said that I'm using a new recording system now, and I'm still trying to kind of figure it out, so I'm a little bit shaky on it. So I'm hoping this is a little better. And keep a lookout, because I may or may not have a bonus episode coming out soon. Keep an eye out. I try to drop, if I do have bonus episodes, I try to drop them on just like random days, as opposed to just having them on the usual, like, Tuesday mornings when I drop the episodes, when I do drop them. Or hopefully, I'm going to keep to the schedule now. I really, I'm usually behind in, like, my research and all of that, and, like, and taking my notes and all of the rest of it, and recording. But I'm actually, like, quite forward now, so I've got a few episodes already done and ready to go, just have to record them, and that's the easy part. So hopefully there'll be some coming soon. Again, if you need help, thehotline.com or thehotline.org, should I say. And thank you once again, and I will see you next time. Take care. Bye. Love y'all.